say the word statistics, are you right now suppressing the urge to yawn or even switch off? In fact, one statistician has made an incredible contribution to Australia, helping to measure poverty for the first time, ensuring ballot papers are more fair and democratic, and by inventing a key logistics algorithm still used today to get stuff from A to B quickly. Meet 89-year-old Alison Harcourt, mathematician and Senior Victorian of the Year. I spoke with her in her Melbourne home. Alison?
Hello, Erica. Do come in.
Thanks for agreeing to meet me. So Alison Harcourt, as a child, I believe, even before you were at school, you had a great interest in maths.
Yes, I loved it. There was a small kindergarten which I went to, and I can remember doing very simple sums in arithmetic. In particular, one sum that where you could go two ways to get to the answer. Mm. And the pleasure I had of finding that I got the same answer each time, whether I went by route A or route B, at the end I got the same answer. And this was a delight to me.
And you went on to primary school and high school. What role did your parents play in kind of shaping you and helping you with your education?
Oh, my parents were determined that not only I, but also my three elder siblings all had the best possible education, and they were determined that were we good enough, we should all get a university education, and there was no differentiation between girls and boys.
And so you gravitated towards math. What was it like going to Melbourne University? You were, I think, quite a minority in terms of women against men, women versus men in the mathematics stream. What was that like?
The university had a separate course available to people who were doing honours in mathematics. Mm. And within that group, there were about 20 men and Pat, the other woman, and me. I didn't know any of the men there. I made friends with Pat, and we were friends throughout going through. But there was no, in those days, there was no mixing. Mm. There were the men and there were the women. I think the men, however, benefited from having been all together at school, whereas apart from Pat, I didn't know anybody in the class.
And you went on to do your master's, and through your master's, you eventually became one of the co-creators of a type of programming called the branch and bound algorithm.
I worked on my thesis for the master's degree, and during that time I went to England, where I got a sort of as a research student position at the London School of Economics. And by that time, I'd pretty well solved the problem, but I was able to collaborate with a lady called Ailsa Land, and together we sort of brushed it up and made it a really good idea.
And you submitted a paper where you only put the initials of your first name on the paper. Why was that important?
It was going to an American journal, and we were very suspicious that had we shown that we were women, it would have delayed the appearance. But it got through.
And I understand that your branch and bound algorithm, it's still used for lots of things today involving whole numbers. So, you know, companies in transport, airlines, mining, logistics, everywhere. How does it feel to have created something that still persists today, that's still being used today?
I'm completely overwhelmed because although we wrote the paper, but shortly afterwards, I returned to Australia. And when I returned to Australia, there was, oh, well, you know, Alison's back, isn't it nice? Yes, she's going to be lecturing in statistics at Melbourne University. And I don't think anybody was in the least interested, as far as I could see, in what we'd written.
In the mid-1960s and early 70s, Alison was part of a groundbreaking team focused on systematically measuring poverty in Melbourne for the first time.
There was not a lot of statistics, but there was a lot of computing needed. It was at a time when the University of Melbourne had a computer, just one. And we could enter data by using punched cards. And so I found myself guiding the punched cards, so to speak, as they went into the computer and looking at what it yielded.
Their approach was eventually applied at a national level through a landmark commission of inquiry into poverty. It became known as the Henderson Poverty Line, and it set a benchmark for measuring disadvantage. But different work beckoned Alison.
By that stage, I had retired because that was at the time when my first child was born. So I'd left the university, but I did work on that first one.
So tell me about stepping out of paid work and stepping into the home and raising a family. What was that transition like?
Oh, very surprising. And in a way, particularly because I had married late and most of the friends from university already had children and those children were growing up. And a lot of them had had to sort of work out the work-home balance, you know, how were they going to manage that? So I was had a lost end. What at that time was called the Nursing Mothers Association were very helpful. And that worked out all right.
Did you miss working in a paid sense?
Yes, I did, but not enough to make me want to go back. That happened a few years later. And I was at of some gathering down at Monash one time, sort of there, and there was a lady there whom I'd known at Melbourne University, and she said, Alison, you're not doing anything at this time. Why don't you come and do some tutoring? So I returned. I was very pleased to do that.
And you've been tutoring ever since. You continue to tutor. There was another part of your work that had a major impact on that piece of paper that we all love or sometimes love to hate, the Australian ballot paper. Can you tell me about how you became concerned about ballot papers and the way it would be decided what position a candidate would end up on the paper?
I had worked out that the very important thing was the membership of the Senate. And I looked at all the ballot papers in 1975 when there was a double dissolution. Now, they were already getting to be like a carpet, a long, long piece of paper. And we have six states and two territories. So I looked at these eight papers and noticed to my surprise that the Liberal National Coalition had first or second place on every ballot paper, and Labor was somewhere in the confusion of all the other parties.
So this is first or second position, like from the left working across the ballot paper. And so what's the concern about that left-hand position?
Well, that it was the donkey vote which was the concern, because that meant that those particular parties had an unfair advantage.
And the concern about that is some people just walk in and tick the first box they see. It wasn't all supposed to be random.
Yeah, it was meant to be random. And a colleague of mine, Malcolm Clark, and I got to work, and we had a look and puzzled about how likely was this to occur if a genuine randomisation had been done for the order of the, well, it was the order of the parties. And we discovered that what had happened in 1975 was something that was very, very unlikely to turn up, because had it been genuine random, it would not have looked like that. And so the next thing was to find out how was the randomisation done. And I went along to the next election where I could sit in and watch a randomisation procedure.
So this is where they're choosing the positions on the ballot paper?
Yes, yes. And what they did was they took a slip of paper and wrote down the names of all candidates, and then they took a packet of clean envelopes and put the slip of paper, one in every blank envelope, and then they put the envelopes in a box and shook it and drew the numbers out. My eyebrows went up, not literally, but in my head I thought, do they think that that is random?
Why is that not random?
Have you tried shaking a box of envelopes?
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay.
They don't mix. And there were such possibilities there of careless putting the slips, the envelopes into the box. Mm. It was just not a very good way of doing it.
So you and Malcolm Clark...
We wrote a paper about this. I was summoned to the meeting of the Joint Select Committee on Electoral Affairs at Federal Parliament, spoke to them.
But the Electoral Act was changed on the basis of your paper.
The Electoral Act recognised the validity of what we said, and they changed it and said that in future proper randomisation will occur.
And what is proper randomisation?
It's Tats Lotto.
A ball.
A ball. So instead of having slips of paper, the labelled, the numbered balls were put into the Tats Lotto container, they turned the handle and they got proper randomisation. Mm. And that's it.
Why do you think the Senate's so important, and why did this issue really kind of get under your goat so much?
I think it's because I regard that everybody is equal, and that if we are citizens of this country, we all have an equal right to say what is happening.
When you entered the field of mathematics, entered statistics eventually, women were still way outnumbered by men. And today, in the STEM subjects, women are still outnumbered. Yep. How do you feel about that? Why do you think that persists?
Oh, I think it's a slow progress. And I don't think sort of saying you've got to have a quota always works. I think sometimes it can, in fact, rebound. But I'd like to see women more involved. Women are implicitly good mathematicians. Over the centuries, they've been good mathematicians who were the people who knew how to cook.
Which is basically chemistry.
Yes. Who were the ones who knew the appropriate proportions when they were cooking? But this was all implicit and not recognised as what women were doing. But still, in the tutorials, it's mostly the boys who ask the questions. And I don't know how it's going to be changed. And I don't really want to see the women just copying the men. I'd like them to think of other ways of handling this problem.
What keeps you teaching all these years?
Oh, I like it. But it's the pleasure of seeing, you know, young people grow and sort of seeing the students getting an idea. The statistics is a tremendously widespread technique or knowledge, and it turns up everywhere. And we say it's just when you're dealing with numbers, you need to look at the context in which those numbers have been derived. And that's where statistics comes in.
At the end of 2018, Melbourne University awarded you an honorary doctorate, and you've been named Senior Victorian of the Year for 2019. Some of the people I've spoken to research this story have said you're extremely understated about your achievements. Hiding her light was what one person said to me. How do you feel about all this attention now?
Some of it has been difficult to sort of live up to the imaginary Alison. The imaginary Alison is quite different from the actual Alison. And she's just sort of going along and following her own path. You just keep going, and that's it.
Alison Harcourt, statistician and senior Victorian of the Year. I love that. You just keep going. And though she's less active these days, Alison has spent much of her life also involved in a range of community activities such as conservation work, Meals on Wheels, as well as Scottish dancing and Roganing. And of course, she continues to tutor at Melbourne University, and she'll be 90 in November.